And now, Sports Day with Jared Healy and Sam McClure for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6, Wheels Car of the Year, and Red Energy. Moving house? Call your local energy retailer. Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Shortly, Sam Mitchell, Hawthorn coach, and a man who has led one of the great turn-ups of the season, will join us very shortly. Richo's in the house, so we'll get straight to it. Scoop, welcome to you.
Hello, Jared. Lots happening in the world of sport. Plenty of fallout of our conversation with Brady Rawlings and North Melbourne. You feel like there's more news to come out of North Melbourne in the coming weeks. And I agree with you, Sam Mitchell, what an incredible job he has done in the face of, it must say, a fair bit of adversity, given what happened at the end of last year with Alistair Clarkson. And also, before we get to Richo, at some point tonight, I need to talk to you about tickets.
Look, I know you've got tears running down your
eyes. I need to talk to you about tickets.
I need to talk to our listening audience about Hawthorn's problem.
What's that?
We need to solve the problem while Sam is here. 133693.
I think I know where you're going.
For a Spinalese pillow, if you could pluck a ruckman from Hawthorn's history to come back and help them this week, who would you go for? 133693. Just a couple off the top. Would you bring back the dynamic leader himself in Don Scott? Paul Salmon, Ian Payton, Spider Everett, Chris Langford rucked in one grand final.
Langford?
It was a losing grand final.
He
still did, the great fullback. Mickey Byrne, David Hale. I mean, the list goes on and on, and I'm sure there's many that I haven't. But Sam Mitchell joins us very shortly. Before that, though,
looking very well rested,
Jared. He does. He looks like he's lost some weight. Can I congratulate you, Richo? News did filter through to me via the jungle drums that Ella was born. You are now the father of three beautiful girls. Welcome.
You got a telegram over there in Java.
I did, Jared. Yeah. Just jungle drums.
Yes, little Ella last Monday. So, yeah, we're all going well. Not getting as much sleep as we would like, but that's normal, isn't it, when you have kids? But, yeah, all going well. Thanks for that, Jared.
Tell us, Richo, before the start of the season, what were your thoughts about the Hawks?
I was one that didn't see them rising up the ladder much at all. So, yeah, I was wrong, 100%.
Well, I think a lot of us were, Jared.
There's a lot of support for Don Scott coming through. A lot of support for Don Scott.
I think what we know about Sam's short coaching tenure so far is that he's willing to throw the magnets around.
He's creative.
One thing, Jared, I wasn't expecting when I was covering the Hawks Brisbane game
Frost
on the weekend was Frost going forward. And then he went to the wing. The man who put in there joins us live on Sports Day. Sam Mitchell, welcome.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm enjoying your conversation about the rucks. I think some of the stories I've heard, Don Scott, Ian Payton, I think those two fighting it out at training on a Thursday night might be a bit of fun.
Yeah, I reckon they'd put a show on. A lot of support coming through on the lines for Don Scott. Mitch, what are you going to do with the ruck?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'd like Dewey to have to answer that for a little bit longer. So,
okay.
We still have a fitness test for Ned Reeves tomorrow that we're hopeful. He looked a little bit better than I thought he would today. So that'll make it all for nothing if that comes through. And if not, we'll be able to get creative and try something new.
It was a really interesting game. I watched the whole lot of it, and you battled hard early, but you just couldn't quite match them. And then you put the tag on Lockie Neal, which sort of helped, and your transition from back half to front half was excellent. Can I ask you, why did you not put a tag on Lockie Neal from the start?
Yeah, it's a good question. The challenge with someone like Lockie Neal in particular is he's just so good that I'm not sure you can keep him down anyway. I think that he's such a dominant player that it is a challenge, and you do have to compromise a lot of what you're trying to do. And I look at the best teams. We look at Melbourne and we look at Brisbane and look at the Bulldogs. None of those best teams are running taggers. So everyone says we should tag those teams that are actually trying to become teams like that, that are formidable, that are playing in grand finals and that are, you know, very, very hard to stop. And those teams have the capability of playing a tag, but they don't usually start with it. So it's something that we want to have in our kit bag, and we might try something this week. We might start again. So we're just looking for our best mix for lots of different things. And, you know, we want to give our players the best chance to have the best type of performance they can. And at the moment, we don't view that as being done with a tag.
Hey, Mitch, really enjoying what the Hawks are doing this year. And you appear to be a coach that likes to go into different games and bring a little bit of a different tactic depending on who you're playing. And I think footy's gone away from that a little bit, where you're all worried about your structure and what you're doing. But do you enjoy that part of coaching where you can pick something in the opposition and take it away from them? Like you took Langdon away from Melbourne and you'd put the tag onto Lachie Neale this week. You throw Frost forward. You seem to really enjoy that part of coaching, just doing things a little bit different.
Yeah, I think our coaching group have got a high threshold for something different, which is great. I think a lot of really good ideas. I'd love to claim them all as my own, but our coaches have been around for a long time collectively, and we throw around a lot of crazy ideas, crazier the ones than we've actually presented out on game day so far. But it is a good, I mean, it's a really good fun part of the game, the tactical version, you know, actually bringing it that 2 hours on game day where you get to bring out and explore lots of different aspects of the game. But at the end of the day, you want to be a team that stands for something. And we certainly have some parts of our DNA that aren't all the way built. So the majority of our game is going to be the same every week. And the last little 10 or 15% where you use some tactical advantages to try and outmaneuver the opposition, that's the good fun part. But it's not the part that wins you the big games when they really matter at the end of the day.
Hot and steamy conditions expected in Darwin on the weekend, Sam. Now, Jared and Richo, usually when you're training for those conditions, what comes out?
Wet balls.
Detergent.
The dishwashing liquid usually goes in. That happened at training today, Sam. So talk us through how you change, if anything, the way you want to play for conditions like this. Like, do you tell your players to chop out the short kick and just take distance? Take meterage, or do you still want to play the same way?
I'm really not one that gets too specific with the boys. What we did today was we looked at some vision from a couple of games that have been played there over the last few years, and one in particular was Melbourne versus Adelaide from 2019. And so Sam Frost was playing for Melbourne, and Andy Otten, one of our assistant coaches, was playing for Adelaide. So we had a bit of fun today, and we talked about the Frost Otten Cup, and we watched some. Some vision, just so the players had the idea of what the ground might look like, what the conditions would look like. And there's a couple of games up there where teams have been able to move the ball reasonably well, and then there's some where it's just a scrap and get it forward in any sort of territory you'll take. So we're not sure what we'll get. I think it's up to the players, really, and we just challenge the players that it's going to be their mentality. We can prepare them for what it might be, but they're going to be the ones that have to play in that condition and get used to that as quickly as possible. And the team that handles that better will obviously have a small advantage, but we also have to be sure that we're not playing against Darwin. We're going to Darwin to play against the Suns. So our focus has to be clear that we're playing against the Suns, who are a very physical, very combative team. And if we're not ready for that because we're thinking about conditions, then we set ourselves up for failure.
The Frost Otten Cup, Richo, wasn't something that I was expecting to hear tonight.
No, definitely not. Jai Newcomb, Mitch, you must be rapt to be coaching him. I mean, he's only been in the game 12 months, and it's a pretty remarkable rise for him. I remember his first game, he had those 13 tackles, so he's got the right aspects to his game, but gee, he's building on it now, the way he's playing through that midfield, taking metres and playing a territory game as a midfielder. You've got to be thrilled with him.
Yeah, he's quite easy to coach, Richo. He really does a lot of it himself. He's very self-driven, and you know, he's pointing him in the right direction. I think Robert Harvey's really getting the best out of him with the way he goes about coaching him and putting him in really good positions to not just do what he's doing, but to continue to build his game. And I think that's what's been pleasing. I think last week he really took some, as you mentioned, some extra meterage. He was able to carry the ball, and there was a couple of plays where he took a bounce rather than just kicking it from where he was, and I thought that was a real progression for him. I don't think too often this year he's put together full four quarters, so he's played lots of really good moments and played a good half and maybe fades out for a quarter here or there, but as he matures, that'll start to happen a little bit less, and his game impact will even step up another gear, which will be pleasing for us. But he's going, we're very pleased, obviously, with how he's coming along.
Sam, 63 free kicks in your game on the weekend. It's become a talking point. Jared believes it's become a real issue in the game. Stop me if I'm paraphrasing incorrectly, Jared. And you've got Simon Goodwin coming out and saying, hold your horses, everyone. We shouldn't be criticising.
The number is not an issue to me.
Yeah.
But it's the free kicks that are not paid. But that's another issue.
How are you seeing it, Sam?
Well, the way I look at this is there's around 200 kicks per team in a game, roughly, so 400 kicks, and 70% kicking efficiency is pretty good. So if you do your math, I think the players are making well and truly more mistakes than the umpires are. So they're the ones that I'll think about and control, and I think about the things I do in the coach's box, and there's lots of things I wish I could have back, and they're the controllables for us. The only thing we think about with umpires is what type of discipline we need to show to make sure we're on the right side of the free kick ledger at the end of the game.
But the game is changing fairly rapidly in what the AFL is expecting the umpires to do, though. Sam, is that something that you think about?
No, it's not. I think umpires have got a really tough... people are annoyed at umpires because of the rules sometimes, and sometimes they adjudicate it perfectly. And I think whenever we have a focus on something, we get a spike in that area. And if you're the umpire's coach, then you're going to have focuses in different weeks, and you're going to start to train different aspects of the game. And you might see more of those in that week. And I don't know any other alternative. No different for us. If we have a bad tackling week, we might focus on tackling, and our tackling will go up. If they miss a few, free kicks for a certain thing, they'll train that and look at that a bit more, and then it's likely that'll go up. And that's the evolution of umpiring week to week. And I think what happens is they've also got a whole heap of injuries at the moment, so they're getting tested for depth as well, the same way that a playing group is. It's just that they don't have supporters in the stand backing them as often as they should.
Do you think any of the recent rules, like the 666 stand, protected zone, ruck nominations, descent, the dangerous tackle, Mitch, are there any of those that if you could have a say on that you would maybe reverse or take back to where it originally was? Any of those you don't like in the game?
Yeah, there is one for two reasons, and that's the third man up or the nominating the rucks. I think back when I was playing, I know it feels like a lifetime ago, but any time we needed to try and get a score, we were very quick to jump up and hit it out of the area.
Yeah.
And you can't do that anymore. So I think that rule, if they got rid of the ruck nominations and you're allowed to knock it out of the area again, that might help with game congestion. But other than that, yeah, I think the game, I don't know about you guys, but I'm actually really enjoying watching the game at the moment. I think there's a bit more scoring. There's a bit more end-to-end play. The 666 has really led to, we were 18 points up with 3 minutes to go, and we were 5 seconds away from potentially losing the game. And that wouldn't have happened 5 years ago without the 666 rule. So I didn't like it this week, but that's been a really good introduction of a rule.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Mitch. And I think from what I can observe of your style, you almost feel as if you're taking on the Malcolm Blight mantra in some respects, and that is go out there to try and kick more goals than the opposition. And you are conceding more goals than you probably would like, but you are also kicking big scores.
Yeah, I mean, I think the competition itself is quite defensive and has really, I look at it, some of the stats from just not very long ago, 6-7 years ago, and teams were scoring 120 points as an average for large blocks of games. And now, I think Melbourne last year were just a dominant force, and as they have been again this year, and I don't think they would average 100. So the scoring has significantly gone down. And if you look at the history of the game, it continues to go up and go down. And what we're not trying to do is emulate what Melbourne are doing, because by the time we catch up to them, everyone will be onto something else. So we're really looking at what the next iteration of the game is and how we can be at the forefront of that run.
Sam, always great to have you on. Good luck on the weekend.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the show.
Sam Mitchell, Hawks coach, is staying on the line because he wants your nomination. Which ruckman should be selected for Hawthorn this week to take up to Darwin to take on the Suns? Connor from Box Hill, first from you.
G'day, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Big nice. Fan of the show.
Nice.
Sam would be very fond of this, but Ben McAvoy, big boy McAvoy
big
back
boy.
In prime, I reckon.
Gee, he...
Still a young lad, so I grew up watching Hawthorn through their dynasty. The big boy McAvoy was always my favourite.
So you want big boy back in? He's captain at the present time.
I do. I want him back. He's in my super coach draft side as well, so if he's in the side, I'm performing well. So.
Fantastic, Connor. I've actually had a nomination come through to me. John Kennedy Sr., somebody wants back in, which is a throwback to a bygone era. Jason from Coburg, who were you selecting?
Mate, it's got to be the big fish, Paul Salmon.
Paul Salmon.
He's the team of the century ruckman.
Yep.
Which probably means he's been better than anyone else has ever been through the club in the last 150 years. Best and fairest winner and a fantastic mark and kick for goal.
And just drop him in behind the play too. He loved getting in behind the play, the big fish, and just taking intercept marks. Back when the ruckman used to do that, and we'd just let him do it. We'd just let him get away with it every week.
And one final one before the break. Clinton's from Blackburn. Clint.
Hey, guys. Thank you. I'm going to take a different angle on this one. Sam said it himself. Third man up. Jordan Lewis. He's a bit chewy, Friday.
All right.
Get him in the midfield. It's a bit left field, but...
I like it. That's the creativity that Sam Mitchell, I think, will respond to.
In fact, Jordan...
Get
on you, Clinton. Thanks for your call. In fact, Jordan might have been the man that actually had the rule change.
Destroyed the rule.
Between Jordan Lewis and Sean Grigg, I reckon they're the two that had Simon Lethlane change that nomination rule when he was running the football department.
Very creative, Clinton. You've picked up the spine of those pillows. Oh, very nice. Line.
More Sports Day with Matthew Richardson after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Matthew Richardson is live in studio. John is from Bendigo, wants to talk about Sam Mitchell and umpiring. Welcome, John.
Good evening, gentlemen. Love your show. Not specifically about Sam. I'm just wondering whether Sam's wondering about making comment about the umpiring, whether he's going to get 50 motors or $50,000 fine. I'm not sure. The other one is, it's just sort of the dissent. You know, Gil thinks it's not an emotional game. Well, I don't know where he come from, but and protecting the forwards, clearly going forward and running for the ball and getting pushed in the back all the time. And it's just, no free kicks.
You're on the money there, John. You are spot on there, John. We got another spinalized pillow. Another spinalized pillow for John because he is seeing it clearly as we speak.
Are you getting 4 a.m. texts as well from Jared in the middle of the night, waking up from nightmares about hands in the back?
He's happy to get those and your beef with the tickets. Tell us about your experience today.
Goodness gracious me.
You finally realised, have you?
I've come around.
Good. Here, what happened?
I've seen
it's not easy out there with the tickets.
Well, it's Carlton versus Collingwood on Sunday. It's been a long time since I've been to the footy with a group of friends, where everything's been happening. So I've booked lunch in on Swan Street. There's 8 of us going and get tickets. This is on Monday, so 6 days before the game. And, Jared, it's the process.
Tell me about it.
Well, you can't get 8 tickets where you want to sit, and then you think about, should we get 4 here and 4 there? No, but we want to sit.
The general public have been ringing up this show telling you about this, and you have just ignored them.
No, I haven't ignored it.
You've ignored them?
No, I haven't ignored it. But, you know, often I'm working during games.
Right.
So I haven't.
So you now understand their pain.
Firsthand.
They
have to change this.
And then once you get there on Sunday, you're going to deal with some horrific lines to get drinks and beverage and food. Yes, I was at Dreamtime Saturday night. And the line, now I know there was some trouble in the crowd. Frustrated people standing in lines for 20 minutes or more to get some food.
So the thing about that, though, that at least I can understand and that it computes.
But it was never like that.
They're understaffed, though, Richo.
Yeah, I know
that. A lot of these companies are understaffed. So when you haven't got enough people pouring beers, there's going to be queues. At least that makes sense. This one about having to reserve, why? COVID's over. I'm not sure if all of us have accepted that. But, Jared, we can't be having a situation where 10 days in advance, people are having to book seats that 20% of people don't turn up to. Like, I think we can go back to, if it's a big game, sure, level 1 and 2 needs to be reserved.
Yep.
The others are come as you please, first in best dressed. This whole situation, if I'm a 30-year-old tech-savvy person that's struggling over 35 minutes to book seats.
Yep.
You can imagine what a lot of people are struggling with.
I can imagine, absolutely. I've tried it myself, Scoop.
Yeah. And I'm not saying this is the AFL's fault. I'm not saying it's the government's fault, but someone's got to take responsibility for the biggest game in the land and the biggest ground in the land.
Well, when your tickets are getting a bit ridiculous. When your ticket sales are significantly down, you have got to have a person designated to solve whatever issues you can solve. And the biggest one is ticketing. Every person you talk to hates the ticketing process now.
But at least, I know we're laughing about people have been telling me this for 2 years. At least during that, though, Jared, most of it was reduced capacity. So if it was only 50,000 were allowed and people were struggling to find big groups with the same, at least, it's a bit harder because it's 1 every 2 seats. We're back to normal. We're full capacity. Why are we still doing this? I really don't understand.
A sports update thanks to Tyre Power. Their buying power puts the power in your lane.
Now, I'm a bit disappointed this week that we get to a situation where everyone's now in a position where we're going to be quite negative towards the umpires. I think we have to be really careful as an industry that we don't go down that path and we continue to respect and want our young people to get into umpiring.
Simon Goodwin there, the reigning premiership coach, talking about the conversations about umpiring. Who's he talking about there, Joe?
I feel that most people aren't negative at umpires. In fact, I think a lot of people are at pains to say this is not about the umpires. It's about the rules that they're being forced to interpret. It's not the umpires. They're doing the job that they have to do. I just think it's a different, it's a totally different situation that a lot of people are talking about. Some of these rules that just aren't working.
Can I get an early yes, no, away? I know we haven't started it, but just in vain of that.
Yeah.
Are you happy with the game in its current form?
No.
Okay.
Too many 50-metre penalties. Too many silly little rules, like this descent rule, which has just gone too far the way that it wasn't meant to go.
Now, we know you don't like the stand rule already.
Stand rule, no, don't like it. Protected areas, okay, and we're going to do it in yes, no, but...
Hang on, he's up and about.
He is up and about, he's not happy. He's talking about brown paper bags and now he's bagging the rules, which is...
The dangerous tackle was brought in for a very good reason, right? Mm. But it's now evolved into something that is just ridiculous. Some of the ones that are being paid now are ridiculous. But they evolve into what they're not meant to be in the first place, these rules.
I think Ella May has given Richard a little bit more energy.
She's given him a little bit of a bit of spring in his step. Can I just say, Richard, I very rarely see an experienced umpire make the same errors that are giving the game a bad name at the moment,
yeah.
Which tells me that there's an issue going on at training, at the education level. It needs to be improved. Now, if they're still having one session on Zoom a week because of COVID, let's get fair dinkum. We've moved past that. Let's get together and let's get the junior umpires with the senior umpires.
Do we not pay them enough? Should they be paid more?
Well, I'm not sure whether the cash is the issue, but certainly what my eyes and your eyes are seeing is not what the young umpires are seeing.
Yes, no, Richo is coming up. Can I ask you to ask something?
Right.
I just want you to just dig into what Richo hates Carlton
so
much.
That is stupid, Sam.
Because I never hear him. And I love Richo. I listen to him every weekend.
Why do you
7.
Make things up on air?
And he never says anything positive.
That is
about
a lie.
The Blues.
I love Sam Walsh.
In fact, the more they have won this year, Jared.
I love Charlie Kerner.
The less I've heard. And here
I
is Richo.
I love Patrick Cripps.
Yeah, he likes players, but the actual club doing well.
You idiot, Sam.
Yes, no, Richo.
You've got to remember I'm from Richmond.
Yes, no, Richo. Next.
I think that's a yes.
Yes, no, Richo. For Wilson Homes, $40,000 cash discount. Back for a limited time.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Matthew Richardson is in the studio.
This is what happens when Carlton win. Supporters like
Jeez,
you
he's
get
up
out
and
of,
about, Scoop,
they get
he?
Out of control.
He is right up and about.
Yes, no, Richo is here. Jared's back, so he gets to take the reins, which means I'm out.
You can join in any time you like, Scoop. Richo, hand on heart, the implementation of the descent rule is the biggest joke in footy right now, yes or no?
Yes.
Carlton is the second best team in the competition, yes or no?
Yes.
The Blues can win the flag this year.
No.
Calling North Melbourne a club in crisis is fair.
Yes.
David Noble will be coach of North Melbourne this time yet next year. Yes or no?
Yes.
Veteran players like Patrick Dangerfield could be given a rest every 5 to 6 weeks to keep them fresh, ongoing. Yes or no?
Yes.
Tim Taranto is more important to keep for the Giants than Jacob Hopper. Yes or no?
Yes.
A Tasmanian team is unsustainable while the Giants are drawing 5,000 people to a game, yes or no?
No.
Richmond will make the top 4 this year, yes or no?
No.
Richmond will make the top 8 this year?
Yes.
Lachie Neale should always be tagged from the first minute to the last, yes or no?
No.
Adam Sard is a poor omission from your soon-to-be-announced rolling All-Australian team, yes or no?
No.
Lachie Neale should be Brownlow favourite.
No.
Patrick Cripps should be Brownlow favourite.
No.
Clayton Oliver should be Brownlow favourite.
Yes.
Hello.
The Cats are certain.
They've got 10 threes already, Melbourne.
Okay.
The Cats are certainties to make the 8. Yes or no?
Yes.
Certainties?
Yes, I said.
North Melbourne should get a priority pick.
No.
North Melbourne should get 2 priority picks.
Oh, Jared.
No.
Mark McVay will coach Giants next year.
No.
James Hurd will coach Giants next year.
No.
Ken Hinckley will coach the Giants next year.
No.
The Giants should ask Ken Hinckley if he would like to coach the Giants next year.
Yes.
Are you using yes, no to air a bit of a rumour?
Percentage will decide 8th spot on the ladder, not wins and losses.
Yes.
Now, Richo, I know you've been there before tonight. But just for clarity, and for those that have just joined us, you are now the new Brad Scott of football, the head Scott, the head man of football. Mm. Which of these rules needs to be reset, dropped, or you're happy to leave them. So it's not yes, no. Yep. It's reset, dropped, or happy. Protected zone.
Reset.
666.
Happy.
Stand rule.
Drop.
Ruck nomination.
Drop.
Descent rule.
Reset.
Dangerous tackle.
Reset.
Deliberate out of bounds.
Reset.
Prior opportunity.
Reset.
Push in back.
Reset.
Right, so Richo would like to invent a new sport. It's called New AFL. It's a lot of resetting.
There's a lot wrong.
Oh, geez, passionate tonight.
He is indeed. Ella's had a massive...
It's all about Ella, I'm telling you.
But what that tells you is a lot of these rules are fine.
Don't point at me like that.
But they've evolved into a situation where they're not quite working how they should be.
Nice point there from Richo. Wimbledon got it right, banning the Russian players to put pressure on Russia. Yes or no?
Jeez. Political.
Yes.
The ATP and the WTA got it wrong, pulling their points from the tournaments. Yes or no?
Yes.
Wimbledon gave the Australian Open a lesson in good civic behaviour. Yes or no?
Yes.
Sam Doherty is a certain All-Australian at the halfway mark if it was announced tonight.
Yes.
2 weeks for Switkowski was the right call for the chicken wing.
Yes.
Hawthorn's win over Brisbane was the upset of the year.
Yes.
The elevated bike paths in Melbourne CBD is a huge turnoff for most Melburnians trying to enter metropolitan Melbourne. Yes or no?
Yes.
Melbourne becoming a European-like bike-dominated city is an elitist dream of the Melbourne City Council. Yes or no?
Yes.
55,000-plus people will turn up to the Collingwood-Carlton game.
55,000?
Plus.
Yes.
60?
Yes.
70?
Yes.
80?
No.
75?
Yes.
The Suns will make the eight.
No.
Stephen Kerr's spray to the senators who won't support gun control was outstanding leadership.
Before you answer that, Richo.
Since we left Shooteron, 14 children were killed 400 miles from here. And a teacher. And in the last 10 days, we've had elderly black people killed in a supermarket in Buffalo. We've had Asian churchgoers killed in Southern California. And now we have children murdered at school. When are we going to do something?
Wow.
Yes or no?
Yeah, that was really powerful, yes. Using his platform.
Yep.
Yeah, really.
Did
really
you like that, Jared?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. It was, somebody's got to get some sense into them.
No, but I know.
He's been a leader in these areas before.
Because politics and sport don't always mix, but it seems to be uniformly loved, those comments, that he basically refused to talk about basketball and just talked about the incident that everyone else was.
I think it'll have a powerful impact, and maybe some of these stubborn Republican senators are going to finally pull their finger out.
Well said.
Elphington Grammar should be allowed to prevent the public from walking through their school grounds. Yes or no, Richo?
Gee.
How is this going?
Well, yes.
Though, Richo.
Yes.
No public golf course is safe in inner city Melbourne.
Yes.
John Rolfe wrote this week that Carlton is everybody's second team, Richo, including your good self. Yes or no?
Did he write that?
Yes.
Do you agree?
No.
Do you strongly disagree?
Yes.
In fairness, you hate Carlton, though.
Well, that can't be correct. Carlton have won, 15, 16 it's premierships?
There's a big push for the Blues.
16 premierships. How could you ever
feel sorry
for Carlton?
They've been in the dungeon for a dozen years, though.
I would actually put it to you, Jared, that Carlton are the most hated club of the competition.
Not this year.
No,
not hated.
No, over the course of its history.
One final before the break.
Definitely
is Scoop officially back on the Blues bandwagon after a 15-year absence?
He certainly is.
What do you mean? I am 30 and know very little. Thank you, Zoe.
He's up and about.
There hasn't been a wagon to be on.
He even bought tickets to the game Sunday.
This is Friday.
You know he's on.
The day grand final is the best result for the grand final.
Yes, it is.
Are you a day grand finaler?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jared?
I'm a Twilight.
You're a Twilight
man? I'm a Twilight.
What are you?
I'm whatever time people want it. I'll be there watching.
Which is the afternoon.
Yeah. Man of the people. More Sports Day with Matthew Richardson as we wrap up after this.
Matthew Richardson is here for Maccas. Download the My Maccas app for new deals every week in May.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Do you think, Jared, with the appropriate permission, I'd be able to play impersonator stuff next week?
I wouldn't have thought so, Scoop.
Okay.
You'd have to ask Richo.
Right.
Joe Willie Songer retired overnight. Richo, I'm not sure you saw it, but it was one of the more emotional tennis careers endings I've seen and sets a pretty high bar, I think, given that some of the greats are going to go out over the next 5 years.
Yeah, we just saw it here too on the sport news. So he had a pretty good career, made a Grand Slam final, didn't he? A couple of semis maybe?
Got beaten by Novak.
Australian Open, he got done here. I think it was a long time ago now.
05 off the top of my head?
2008 for memory. And I reckon he was semi-finalist in a couple of others. That said, one of the other issues was Alex de Minaur was complaining about the crowd behaviour, which is interesting as an ironically, given that everyone was complaining about the Aussies in the doubles here last year, but no one at Tennis Australia was saying anything.
We love breeding tennis players in this country that complain. Love it.
Hmm. Well, maybe it's a new tradition.
It's an individual sport.
Maybe it's a new tradition.
Complaining for yourself. You're not complaining.
There's a lot of Australians that complain versus other countries.
Right. Okay. It's an Aussie thing, you think?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying. Yeah. The evidence would suggest so.
Mm.
You reckon? No,
well, we complain a lot. Our tennis players complain a lot when we lose. That's all I'm saying.
I haven't seen evidence of that over the journey.
You've seen evidence of it in the last 3 years.
Pat Rafter never complained.
No, no, no. I'm not talking about historically.
Mm. Richo, let's move on to your All-Australian team.
Okay. From the back line, Sicily remains in. Most marks in the comp. Coaches' votes again. Dominated. Poor Eric Hipwood wasn't ready to play on Sicily. Second game back. Stephen May stays in at full back. I mean, their back line never gets beaten. Stewart again, 27, 13 intercepts. Coaches' votes. Doherty stays in. Coaches' votes. Wietering. Gee, how good was he late in that game? Won some big one-on-ones. Beat Buddy. Coaches' votes. Sinclair, 32 touches. Stays in. Bailey Smith, 34, and coaches' votes. Lockie Neal stays in. Quiet second half. Was pretty good up till halftime. Langdon stays in on the wing, but needing a good game, Ed Langdon.
Is he going to play this week, or has he got the broken ribs?
Just tailed off a little bit, Ed, so he mightn't be there next week if he misses with injury. Sam Walsh comes into the team, and he has been playing a bit of high half forward, so that's where I've put him.
He has been. Yeah, last 2 weeks he started there.
Yep, so he comes in at half forward. Jeremy Cameron stays in, 12 score involvements, coaches' votes, 20-odd
touches.
And
a torpedo. You always get an extra votes there.
Definitely.
Charlie Curnow, what a star. He stays in, of course. Shea Bolton stays in, 2 goals again. That's 8 times this year. Multiple goals, Shea. Tommy Hawkins back in at full forward. Tom Lynch has gone out, didn't kick a goal, and is going to miss. So going to be tough to retain your spot because key forwards are playing well at the moment.
Back after the bye, Damien Hardwick said today.
Yeah, Max King, of course, 6. So that full forward spot's up for grabs. Charlie Cameron, most goals of any small medium in the comp. The only small or medium in the top 10 goal kickers.
Did you consider making a positional move, maybe Curnow to full forward?
Well, it doesn't really matter, does it?
I just thought you might be able to slide somebody else in on the outside.
I see Charlie more as he can go anywhere, okay. Charlie. Whereas
hybrid.
Whereas Hawk is more your full forward type. Max Gawn stays in as ruckman, but Jarrod Witts is playing well. Clayton Oliver, what a player. 20 contested possessions again. I've just never seen a player hunt the footy like him. Clayton Oliver, Cripps obviously stays in. Petrarca stays in on the bench with Andrew Brayshaw. Tailed off a little bit, but stays in. Jaden Short's come back in because he's versatile. He can play mid now or half back. Most kicks, most metres gained competition. And Wilkie has come in.
Oh, Beaver will be happy.
Beaver will be wrapped.
What position was Max King?
Max King's not in.
Why Beaver's not happy.
I just said, what?
Have you considered Angus Brayshaw on the half-back flank?
Yes, I have. He did.
Can you just check with Beaver whether Sinclair is playing on the half-back line or is he more in the middle?
No, he's half-back.
He's playing half-back.
He's playing half-back.
Okay.
Sam, there are a lot of good key forwards at the moment. Jeremy Cameron, Tom Hawkins, Tom Lynch.
Max King can't get in.
Charlie Curnow. And Max King is one of them. You can't put 6 into 3. Okay, so the players that went out this week were Bailey, McCluggage, and Tom Lynch, Walsh, Wilkie, and Short
who
came in.
Any position, who is your number one forward in the game right now?
Number one forward in the game right now as far as everything they do?
Yeah.
Well, you still can't go past Tom Hawkins. Charlie Curnow is closing the gap on everyone at a rapid rate.
Yeah.
But I think you need a bit of longevity to be the number one forward in the game.
You also have to add up your goals and your goal assists.
And who's the number one score involvement player in the competition?
Tommy.
Tom Hawkins.
Do you think
he gives a lot away?
I'd have Tommy number one.
Yep. He gives a lot away, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, he looks like he gives a lot away. He looks like he actually he wants looks to
give
to
them
do
away.
It.
He wants to give them away.
But I can see why you didn't want to be an All-Australian selector anymore, Richo. Six job. Never goes into three.
I hope you have more kids, Richo, to be honest, because the energy you brought tonight.
Gee, wasn't he up?
It's false energy.
Great to have you, Richo.
Good to see you guys. Good to see Jared back too. Looks well, Jared.
Thank you, Richo.
Happens after a 2-week holiday in the Indian Ocean.
Have a good night.
You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy in Wilson Homes. Jared Healy, Sam McClure with you for the next hour. It's a very Parisian sort of feel to the show tonight. Not only are we going to Paris to speak to Russell Fuller, who's one of the great tennis correspondents with the BBC, to talk all things Roland Garros, Jared. We're also going to chat to Mark Bosnich and the Champions League final is this Sunday, Real Madrid versus Liverpool. It was going to be in St. Petersburg in Russia, and for obvious reasons it's been moved. It is also in Paris.
So what will happen? Will Real Madrid be absolute certainties till the last 5 minutes and all of a sudden Liverpool will come over the top?
Well, probably the opposite. If we're following the script, I mean, Real Madrid have been out of every single tie the last three.
I got that confused.
Yeah.
Reverse the names.
Yeah. So I think Liverpool, you would think, would go in front.
Yeah.
I just have a weird feeling, Jared. I just have a weird feeling that Madrid are having one of these tournaments where they just find a way.
To win.
To win.
Okay.
Have you got a gut feel there? Or?
No gut feel. No gut feel at all. I'll just take your advice.
Right, okay. Let's go to the latest in sport. That's all coming up in the show. For Polaris, Australia's number one side-by-side brand. Bit of fallout to our chat with Brady Rawlings and North Melbourne, 24 hours on. How have you reflected on...
Well, I got a lot of feedback myself.
Yeah, so did I. Yep.
That people weren't overly happy with his performance.
Let's compare our feedback. Yeah, I got similar feedback. I think...
Particularly that he didn't know about Jason Horne-Francis, and also that I mean, but I felt that he had he was put up with a losing hand. I mean, you had three people walk out.
Yeah, it was an impossible interview to do.
He's trying to find a positive. He knows deep in his heart that there's issues, and the whole footy world knows that there's issues.
Let's just replay what he had to say to us about the reasoning for his for the three leaving.
They're all three are different scenarios. So we've got. Mark Finnegan's been approached by another club, which he's been weighing up that decision for 3 or 4 weeks now. And I've been in constant contact with him working through that. So
it's very coincidental, Brady, that it all happened in the one day. What was the reason Glenn Luff left?
So Glenn did inform us today of his resignation. So... he's a great operator, Glenn. Loved his time working here with me and for us. And he's decided to pursue other opportunities. So that's probably more of a question for Glenn than for me.
So I think in retrospect, and everything is easier in retrospect, Brady's well within his rights to try to shift the focus and say, well, it wasn't all in one day. It was, I knew about one of these 3 weeks ago. Well, the reality is then, okay, Brady, well, three of them have left inside 3 weeks then. Like, it doesn't make the story any better.
Well, it's not only that, but they wouldn't match a three-year option. There's been unrest there for a period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as the public don't know these things find their way to our ears.
Come to bear, yeah.
And I mean, it's a difficult time there at North Melbourne. They're going to have to bunker down and find some common ground, iron out.
They bunker down or do they hunker down?
They're hunkering down and bunkering down right
they're
now.
They're doing both.
I mean, they've got a coach who's an inexperienced coach at that level. He's had his
but
own
he's
issues.
He's a very experienced football person.
Yeah, he is. There's no question about that. But sometimes they flood over you. And, this is a situation right now.
Overwhelm.
Overwhelm you is the right word. I mean, it's a very difficult case. Maybe the best coach in the world wouldn't be getting more out of them. We don't know because, as you've rightly pointed out, the senior group that are left...
It's not a whole lot to work with.
They're not carrying the load as they should.
Oh, I think that's a fair and reasonable comment.
And there's not enough of them, really. I mean, they've gone really young, so they were always on the hiding to nothing to a degree. But they haven't improved on last year. And last year, I thought there were some signs that things were starting to happen. I thought they, given that, they lost their fullback.
No, so there were good signs.
There were some good signs.
They beat Carlton by 40 points late in the year.
That's right.
So there's some good signs. But then they went young. And then on top of that, you lose Cunnington.
That's right.
And then they trade Tarrant. Then you're really young.
That's right.
You leave yourself open, I think. I want to play some comments from the Premiership coach, Simon Goodwin, Jared, talking about the commentary surrounding the AFL umpiring.
And I'm a bit disappointed this week that we get to a situation where everyone's now in a position where we're going to be quite negative towards the umpires. I think we have to be really careful as an industry that we don't go down that path, and we continue to respect and want our young people to get into umpiring. And I think we all play a role, whether that's players, coaches, administrators, media. I think we all play a role in making sure our industry thrives, and I think umpiring is one of those.
Couldn't agree more with him, but unfortunately, you have to call it as you see it. And as much as I believe the sentiment with Simon is spot on, if it was a one-off situation, two-off situation, not a problem.
No, I agree with that.
But they have introduced some rules that are almost, I think, backwards. And so it's not commentary about the umpires themselves. It's commentary about umpiring per se and what the AFL have asked the umpires to do, which I think is unnatural.
Yeah. I think when people, and I'm not saying this is Simon's position.
Let alone some really poor decisions by individual and inexperienced umpires.
Yeah. I think that's the bigger thing, is that we're not sitting here bashing umpires. What we're sitting here is having a conversation around the expectations from the AFL as to what they're asking the umpires to do. And was it today's paper or yesterday's that Tom Rockliffe wrote that column saying he doesn't...
Yesterday's.
Yeah, he doesn't recognise the game. He said, I'm 10 games out of being an AFL footballer.
Yeah.
And I don't recognise the game that I'm watching. I mean, we used to have Tom on as a regular on back when it was Sports Today. Mm. Him and his dog. I forget the dog's name. But he was always a good explainer of football, I found.
Yeah.
And so I read that with interest, but that's the stuff that we're talking about. It's what do we want the game to look like, and how are we managing it through the lens of umpiring?
Look, they've got some difficulties. They haven't trained together. They've got a new coach. He's implementing new ideas, but right now it's not working, and it needs to get better.
Yep, and a couple of little snippets. Adelaide has lost Taylor Walker to COVID protocols as it prepares for that game against Geelong on Saturday. Josh Rochelle will be managed after a grueling start.
So we've got no Josh Rochelle.
No Walker.
And no Walker, and I've got the game. I'm heading down to the Cattery.
Are you going down the highway?
I'm coming down early.
In the ute.
In the ute.
A bit of a surf before
there, will we? The swell comes up overnight Friday, luckily.
When the Fox roster comes out, does G. Healy go, hang on, Geelong, Saturday, I'll do that.
No.
Thank you.
But I did get the call. There's been a problem. Jordan Lewis is selling his house. Couldn't do the Geelong. I'll do that one for you,
Jordan. He's selling his house, is he?
So I believe, yeah.
It's a very nice house.
Is it?
Yeah, it's in Glen Iris.
Okay. I think that's true. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so down to the Cattery we go. There's no
Rochelle.
Dangerfield. There's no Rochelle. There's no... Who is it? The ins will be...
Joel Selwood's there.
Selwood's there.
That's good. Mitch Duncan's there. Tom Hawkins there. Jeremy Cameron there.
It does make for a more one-sided game, though. They generally have a go, the Crows, but maybe we'll see some of the younger players who've been missing out come back into the team.
Mm. More Sports Day with Russell Fuller from the BBC after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy. If you're moving house, call your local energy retailer, Red Energy and Wilson Homes. It is getting to the pointy end. In fact, Jared, it has reached the pointy end of what you would call the round ball game. I would call the world game. Lots of people would just call it...
I'm able to call it anything.
Soccer. But it is the big one. Liverpool against Real Madrid in the Champions League final. It is ad-free, live, and on-demand on Stan Sport in 4K. It's also on 9 Gem, for what it's worth, which is the channel I'm well-versed in at 4:30 a.m.
That's Channel Scoop.
On Sunday morning. It's Liverpool versus Madrid, Jared, but for many reasons, it should be Liverpool versus Man City. But as we know, they blew an unbelievable chance.
Let's talk to the bloke who knows the most about this particular event, and that is Stan Sport expert, the number one man for the code in this country, Mark Bosnich. Joins us. Welcome to you, Bozza.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
She's a very, very big week for you guys.
Yeah, massive week. Absolutely massive week. You've mentioned... Obviously, we've got the biggest game in the whole of club football coming up on Sunday morning with Real Madrid versus Liverpool. Tomorrow morning as well, we've got the third-tier European competition, Conference League. It's the first year in its existence, and that's Roma versus Feyenoord.
Yep.
And tonight, as you're calling me as well, I'm here to watch Barcelona, so it's a massive week.
Tell me where the game is being played. Is there a home ground advantage?
Oh, it was going to be in Russia,
Jared. No, Jared, no home ground advantage. It's been played in Paris. Now, it was originally set down to be played in St. Petersburg in Russia, but obviously after the sanctions, the final was taken off them. So it's going to be played in Paris, and the demand for tickets, trust me, is I've just secured a tour for a friend of mine. Has been absolutely unbelievable, obviously with a little bit of extra allure of Paris as well.
Yeah.
So everyone's looking forward to it. And ironically, these two teams met back in 1981 in Paris as well, where Liverpool prevailed 1-0. So,
unbelievable.
Absolutely massive game. Liverpool will be a bit disappointed not you know winning the Premier League, but they've won two domestic cups already. And Real Madrid have had a fantastic season in La Liga. They finished top by 13 points from Barcelona, so they'll be going into this game very relaxed and very confident.
Whilst you mentioned Russia, I know this is off tack a little bit, but Scoop and I were discussing earlier in the night whether or not Wimbledon had pulled the right rein in banning the Russian players from competing. Now, the ATP and the WTA have since said, no, that's unfair, we're pulling the points. Mm. We know that the World Game has made their stance by taking away the Champions League game from St. Petersburg. What have they done with individual Russian players?
Individual Russian players, they've left alone, basically, and left it up to them. But they've also banned Russia from the World Cup, so they won't be playing in their playoffs as well. Very difficult situation, Jared, because I think when you start banning individuals, they may or may not feel the same as basically the regime that they're under. But the bottom line is, as people who have lived in these type of regimes throughout history know, whatever you feel, you can't say anything different because you're going to be, and your family, in big trouble anyway. But I just think, look, each to their own, but I just think, like I said to you, when you start banning individuals because of the fact that they are from a certain country, I think you start entering dangerous territory. But we'll see. Let's just hope for everyone concerned that there's peace as soon as possible in Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Bozza. Hey, this competition has so many good stories about it. And when we get to this end of it, it ends up just becoming a knockout competition. So it feels like a cup final in a way. Yeah. Liverpool have had one of the great club seasons that we've seen. I know you said Madrid have been good in La Liga, but their last three Champions League games, Jared, they've basically had no right to win. Mm. I mean, that Manchester City game at the end, they were awful, until the last 5 minutes. It's got that feel about it, Bozza, against the side that absolutely should win it versus a team that knows how to win when they need to.
Yeah, very much so. And you guys know from a sporting perspective as well. And it's very difficult for this as a pundit to go on TV and say this, as people say, is that what we're paying you for? But there are certain things like feelings, and you get that feeling with any sporting team. When, like Real Madrid, in the last three knockout games against PSG, against Chelsea, against Manchester City, for the vast majority of those whole three games, and they weren't just games, they were ties, so two-legged ties, it felt as though that they were running on empty, and they came back and they won in amazing style. And when that occurs, you start thinking to yourself, is their name on the trophy?
Mm.
It's hard to avoid to feel that way. And those who have gone, I mean, I've gone through cup runs when we ended up winning the cup, and you do look back at certain little moments in the earlier rounds and sort of think it must have been destined, because little things that normally might not go your way go your way. And like I said, you do tend to look back at it like that. But Liverpool will be trying. I mean, Liverpool lost, remember, to Real Madrid. I think it was back in 2017, the final. So that was, I think, 5 years ago. You know, the famous final when Sergio Ramos sort of manhandled Mo Salah to the ground. So there's a lot of little subplots here in this final. I mean, Carlo Ancelotti was the coach of AC Milan in that famous Champions League final in Istanbul in 2005, when AC Milan were beating Liverpool 3-0 at half time, and Liverpool come back and won on penalties, you know, 3-3 and then on penalties. So there's a lot of these little subplots going on. Liverpool, I think, will go into the game as favourites. But like I said, the way that Real Madrid have turned this around in these three knockout games, it's very, very difficult. You have to be a brave man to bet against them.
And can I just ask you about the career of Karim Benzema? I was having a look at his numbers today, Bozza.
Unbelievable.
415 appearances for Real Madrid, which he scored 219 times. They are unbelievable numbers for a striker that for a long time we've talked about as being a star, but maybe not have put up on the top echelon as some of the others. He almost deserves to be there now, doesn't he?
Of course he does. He's one of the all-time top scorers at Real Madrid. I think he suffered for a while having Ronaldo there.
Yeah.
You know, I think that basically he had to go into a support role to make things work. And if you, I mean, I think if you talk to him personally, he wouldn't say he suffered, but he gladly accepted being a co-star as long as the team were winning.
He's played out of position, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's really taken the bull by the horn, so to speak. And, you know, he's been one of the main driving forces behind Real Madrid and their run to the final. I mean, you know, he scored a hat-trick against Chelsea. He scored a hat-trick in the first game against Manchester City. He's been absolutely unbelievable. And against PSG, in that second game. And the momentum that Real Madrid have got when they've got on top of teams, because it hasn't been for a long period in any of the games, but they've just really, you know, so to speak, struck when the iron was hot. And he has been, like I said, he's been at front and center of that. There's also Luka Modric, who's been there for such a long time. He's been absolutely outstanding. And they've uncovered a wonderful young player, a Brazilian, called Vinicius Jr., who normally plays out on the left-hand side, and he's been fantastic as well. And putting all that together is Carlo Ancelotti, who's now, you know, is one of the only three managers to ever win this tournament on three occasions, and he's the first manager ever to get to five finals. So it'll be a fitting tribute to him if they happen to win. He'll become the first man ever to win four European Cups / Champions Leagues.
Who knows how to beat Liverpool with a couple of different teams as well. Righto, give us a prediction as you go, Bozza.
Well, look, even though it's Liverpool and they were great rivals to the teams I played with in England, I've got a soft spot for English teams, so I'm going to stick with Liverpool.
Okay. Was that,
very technical prediction, that one.
No, I liked it.
I like that one, Jared.
I liked it. And the good thing is we didn't get ourselves organised with a Tour de France or something from Scoop about Paris. Which disappoints me because you're not with us a tourism guide. Give us your best spot in Paris.
I was waiting for the demographics of France and the way to get to the ground and everything. I didn't get that.
The best snails in France.
Straight down the Champs-Élysées.
Take care, guys.
See you, boss.
I'm off to watch Barcelona. Take care.
Mark Bosnich there, Stan Sport expert. For what it's worth, I think Madrid are going to find a way to win on Sunday. And that's not me barracking for them, although I will be. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy and Wilson Homes. As we come towards, what is a significant period in the tennis world, Jared, we thought we'd go live to one of the great correspondents in tennis. His name is Russell Fuller. He works for the BBC. He's joining us from Paris, and he's been good enough to talk all things tennis. Russell, welcome to Sports Day.
Good evening to the two of you. Hi.
Let's begin on a positive, Russell, because last night Joe Willie Songer bowed out in pretty competitive terms, won the first set, should have probably won another set, but he's been a crowd favourite here since he played off in the final, and 37-odd years of age, he played his final game to a rapturous reception.
What a way to go out. I mean, ultimately, it was really disappointing in that he had just got back in with a chance of taking it into a fifth set.
Yeah.
He was playing Casper Ruud of Norway, and he broke for 6-5 in the fourth set. At the change of ends, La Marseillaise was ringing around the Philippe Chatrier court, which was virtually completely full, and we looked like we were going into a fifth set. And it was only when he walked up to the line to serve that he realised that a muscle in his shoulder had just gone, and he couldn't serve at more than about 75-80 miles an hour. And after that, he was just rolling the ball in. He was broken back. He lost the tiebreak. But none of that really matters, as you say, because what a career. He won 18 ATP titles, and he reached the final in Melbourne, as you were saying, famously in 2008. And the ovation was just spine-tingling. And the presentation the French Federation put on for him, I tell you what, it set the bar very high for the high-profile retirements that are inevitably to come in the next few years. They had all his former coaches from childhood onwards walking out onto the court, his wife, his family, his two children, and pretty much every other French player. And a tribute on the big screen from Federer, Nadal, Djokovic and Andy Murray.
Yes, it was a brilliant moment. I've got great memories of watching him in that final against Djokovic. I was barracking for him. He's always played in the right spirit for mine, and we salute him on the way out. But it's been a really difficult time for tennis all round with the contentious banning of Russian players from Wimbledon. And I think at the time I thought it was the right thing to do. 6 weeks, 8 weeks down the track, I'm probably a little bit more reflective of that position. But it certainly became more contentious when the WTA and the ATP took away the points.
You've probably got a situation now where players are unhappy all round. Yep. Players were, for the most part, very unhappy with the All England Club and the British Lawn Tennis Association's decision to ban the Russians and Belarusians. But they are also, in large numbers, unhappy with the decision to take away ranking points, yep. which I think it takes a bit of explaining this. And maybe those of us who never played the game can't really quite understand how important ranking points are. You'd think, look, you get a chance to play at Wimbledon, maybe on centre court. You get a chance to play for the title. You get a chance to earn up to £2 million for winning the title. And yet, without ranking points, some players, I think, are not going to have the motivation that they normally would have. And that's because it's such an important currency for the players, arguably more important than the cash in their pockets once they get to a certain level of comfort, because they use those ranking points to get entry to future tournaments. And if you're one of the best players in the world, it boosts your seeding and means you don't need to play the other top players until the last couple of rounds. You know how it works. And we've had players say, like John Isner, that he might just pitch up on the Saturday and play his first match on the Monday. Benoit Paire of France was furious about it yesterday. And Naomi Osaka has said she's leaning towards not playing at the moment because she just thinks it'll be weird without the ranking points there.
Yes, well, Naomi can find something weird about most things, but let's take her out of the conversation. Where do you sit on this particular issue, Russell? Did Wimbledon get it right, or has Paris got it right? And a third one, maybe the ATP and the WTA should have elected to freeze the points rather than say no points.
Well, that is certainly an option, and I suppose that is the one area where there might be some compromise potentially. I don't see how the All England Club change their position. They have done so because there was some serious pressure from the government to do so. The British government didn't mandate them to do it, which is why the ATP and the WTA felt that they should be taking ranking points off Wimbledon. But they certainly put a lot of pressure on behind the scenes, and there's a lot of money clearly that moves between the government and tennis and other sports. And last year, Wimbledon was pretty much the first British sporting event to play out to virtually full crowds after the pandemic. And as the All England Club and the LTA pointed out, that couldn't have been done without government support. I think they also think they're on the side of public opinion in the UK. They think it's the right thing to do, but the ATP and the WTA just take this view that it's discriminatory. You cannot do it. You cannot ban certain players from certain countries from playing, whatever the circumstances. As for my position, well, the beauty of being a BBC correspondent is that you are allowed opinions, but actually often you're allowed to sit on the fence, at least publicly, and present both sides of the argument.
Yes, it was
interesting. I'm not sure if he took a position at all.
I think he had a picket right up the middle there at this stage. But we had a similar situation, and I was very strong on this when Djokovic was here. I mean, people say that Tyler's job was to get the best tournament available. I think, well, that's true to a point, but at no stage should you compromise, I guess, your role as a civil participant in the country and in particular in the state that you're in. I thought it was a wrong decision to invite him here. And the wrong decision to give him a spot.
And the wrong decision to try to bend the rules.
And the wrong decision to flex the rules or find loopholes. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit different. But then speaking to people like Mark Bosnich, in the world of soccer, they've banned teams like they have in tennis, but they haven't banned players. And it's a very, very different, difficult scenario, I think, the whole thing.
It's incredibly difficult because what happens if Russian troops are still in Ukraine in 12 months' time? Yeah. Do the All England Club take the same decision? And how about future conflicts and past conflicts? Yeah. Many people would point the finger at the UK and say, well, look, you had all those troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and nobody did anything about it then. So, yes, it's a very, very difficult precedent and potentially a very dangerous precedent for not just the All England Club, but other governing bodies in future years, which is why the ATP and the WTA, I mean, it's not quite a case of saying we'll always keep politics out of sport, but that's pretty much the message, that you cannot discriminate on nationality, however horrific the events might be in one particular country. What I would also say, though, is that tennis is a little bit of an outlier. People in tennis are horrified generally that this action has been taken by the All England Club, but there are plenty of other sports, as you know, that have taken action and they have banned individual athletes, not just the Russian and Belarusian teams.
Yes, it's a really difficult topic, and you could probably have a debate for an hour on it. But one that really took my eye overnight, and it's quite ironic, Scoop, given what happened here in Australia with our world-famous doubles team and the crowd behaviour around it, that Alex Diminar overnight believed that the French fans at his match went over the line as he crashed out of the first round to a highly rated French youngster, Hugo Gaston.
I think we are seeing a bit of a pandemic response in life, perhaps, but certainly at sport all around the world. And I'm not excusing it when I say that, but I think definitely the crowds at the Australian Open, and we're perhaps seeing it in the early days of the French Open, they are a little bit more boisterous than they normally would be. So whether you call it lockdown fatigue or whatever, we've seen it in football in the UK as well. We've had a number of pitch invasions at the end of matches when teams have been promoted or they've won the league title. Now, that used to happen back in the day, but it had pretty much stopped. And I think people kind of feel maybe that they have a license to do this. They're so excited at their team's success. They're exhilarated to be able to watch them without any restrictions. And maybe some of these unwritten rules, although in the case of invading the pitch, that is a written rule, but certainly within tennis, that way of behaving as a crowd is perhaps being forgotten a little bit. And I suspect we might see a little bit more of this.
Russell, we really appreciate your time. I know you're hard pressed with it and you're very busy. Good luck.
What about a couple of tips before you go?
Oh.
A couple of tips for the day or the tournament as a whole?
No, the tournament in total.
The tournament as a whole. Well, I'm fascinated to see how Iga Swiatek goes because it's now 29 wins in the row before her second round match tomorrow. She's the overwhelming favourite, but you can see her being beaten just because she's not been the favourite and the world number one in a Grand Slam before. I would say maybe Amanda Anisimova of the United States would be a good outside bet if she doesn't win. Mm-hmm. On the men's side, Stefanos Tsitsipas had all sorts of problems in the bottom half of the draw, winning in five sets last night. He would still be the favourite to come through that half of the draw. The top half is stacked with Carlos Alcaraz and Alex Zverev and Rafa Nadal and Novak Djokovic. I would go Djokovic purely because I think he's got a point to prove. And I think when he's fit and he's playing regularly, he's the best player in the world. And he won the Rome Masters without dropping a set just a couple of weeks ago. So I'd go for Djokovic in the men's.
Well, I thought you might have gone big and predicted a breakout of Alcaraz, but looks like he's going to have to wait for another couple. Well, Alcaraz anyway, but wait for another couple of tournaments. All the best, Russell, and thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys. Speak to you soon.
Russell Fuller, BBC tennis correspondent, reporting from Paris during Roland Garros. And, of course, Wimbledon not far away.
Have you been watching Alcaraz?
Yeah. I mean, you know that we were talking about him.
Yeah, for the Australian Open.
Well, no, but two Australian Opens ago.
Two, was it?
We were talking about him.
I must have skipped one.
No, you were there. I think it was the same year that that we were talking about this weird disease coming over from
the States. That's right. Yeah.
The AFL said that the China game
might still go ahead. Is the China game still on?
I think it's still on. I think it's back on this year. More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and Wilson Homes. Earlier tonight, Jared, Richard, and myself caught up with the man that everyone's talking about at the moment in the coaching world, Jared, and that's Sam Mitchell from the Hawks.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm enjoying your conversation about the Rucks. I think some of the stories I've heard, Don Scott, Ian Payton, I think those two fighting it out at training on a Thursday night might be a bit of fun.
Yeah, I reckon they'd put a show on. A lot of support coming through on the lines for Don Scott. Mitch, what are you going to do with the Ruck?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'd like Dewey to have to answer that for a little bit longer. So,
okay.
We still have a fitness test for Ned Reeves tomorrow that we're hopeful. He looked a little bit better than I thought he would today. So that'll make it all for nothing if that comes through. And if not, we'll be able to get creative and try something new.
It was a really interesting game. I watched the whole lot of it, and you battled hard early, but you just couldn't quite match them. And then you put the tag on Lockie Neal, which sort of helped, and your transition from back half to front half was excellent. Can I ask you, why did you not put a tag on Lockie Neal from the start?
Yeah, it's a good question. The challenge with someone like Lockie Neal in particular is he's just so good that I'm not sure you can keep him down anyway. I think that he's such a dominant player that it is a challenge, and you do have to compromise a lot of what you're trying to do. And I look at the best teams. We look at Melbourne and we look at Brisbane and look at the Bulldogs. None of those best teams are running taggers. So everyone says we should tag those teams that are actually trying to become teams like that, that are formidable, that are playing in grand finals and that are, you know, very, very hard to stop. And those teams have the capability of playing a tag, but they don't usually start with it. So it's something that we want to have in our kit bag, and we might try something this week. We might start again. So we're just looking for our best mix for lots of different things. And, you know, we want to give our players the best chance to have the best type of performance they can. And at the moment, we don't view that as being done with a tag.
Hey, Mitch, really enjoying what the Hawks are doing this year. And you appear to be a coach that likes to go into different games and bring a little bit of a different tactic depending on who you're playing. And I think footy's gone away from that a little bit, where you're all worried about your structure and what you're doing. But do you enjoy that part of coaching where you can pick something in the opposition and take it away from them? Like you took Langdon away from Melbourne and you'd put the tag onto Lachie Neale this week. You throw Frost forward. You seem to really enjoy that part of coaching, just doing things a little bit different.
Yeah, I think our coaching group have got a high threshold for something different, which is great. I think a lot of really good ideas. I'd love to claim them all as my own, but our coaches have been around for a long time collectively, and we throw around a lot of crazy ideas, crazier the ones than we've actually presented out on game day so far. But it is a good, I mean, it's a really good fun part of the game, the tactical version, you know, actually bringing it that 2 hours on game day where you get to bring out and explore lots of different aspects of the game. But at the end of the day, you want to be a team that stands for something. And we certainly have some parts of our DNA that aren't all the way built. So the majority of our game is going to be the same every week. And the last little 10 or 15% where you use some tactical advantages to try and outmaneuver the opposition, that's the good fun part. But it's not the part that wins you the big games when they really matter at the end of the day.
Hot and steamy conditions expected in Darwin on the weekend, Sam. Now, Jared and Richo, usually when you're training for those conditions, what comes out?
Wet balls.
Detergent.
The dishwashing liquid usually goes in. That happened at training today, Sam. So talk us through how you change, if anything, the way you want to play for conditions like this. Like, do you tell your players to chop out the short kick and just take distance, take meterage, or do you still want to play the same way?
I'm really not one that gets too specific with the boys. What we did today was we looked at some vision from a couple of games that have been played there over the last few years, and one in particular was Melbourne versus Adelaide from 2019. And so Sam Frost was playing for Melbourne, and Andy Otten, one of our assistant coaches, was playing for Adelaide. So we had a bit of fun today, and we talked about the Frost-Otten Cup, and we watched some vision just so the players had the idea of what the ground might look like, what the conditions would look like. And there's a couple of games up there where teams have been able to move the ball reasonably well, and then there's some where it's just a scrap and get it forward in any sort of territory you'll take. So we're not sure what we'll get. I think it's up to the players, really, and we just challenge the players that it's going to be their mentality. We can prepare them for what it might be, but they're going to be the ones that have to play in that condition and get used to that as quickly as possible. And the team that handles that better will obviously have a small advantage, but we also have to be sure that we're not playing against Darwin. We're going to Darwin to play against the Suns. So our focus has to be clear that we're playing against the Suns, who are a very physical, very combative team. And if we're not ready for that because we're thinking about conditions, then we set ourselves up for failure.
The Frost-Otten Cup, Richo, wasn't something that I was expecting to hear tonight.
No, definitely not. Jai Newcombe, Mitch, you must be rapt to be coaching him. I mean, he's only been in the game 12 months, and it's a pretty remarkable rise for him. I remember his first game, he had those 13 tackles, so he's got the right aspects to his game, but gee, he's building on it now, the way he's playing through that midfield, taking metres and playing a territory game as a midfielder. You've got to be thrilled with him.
Yeah, he's quite easy to coach, Richo. He really does a lot of it himself. He's very self-driven, and you know, he's pointing him in the right direction. I think Robert Harvey's really getting the best out of him with the way he goes about coaching him and putting him in really good positions to not just do what he's doing, but to continue to build his game. And I think that's what's been pleasing. I think last week he really took some, as you mentioned, some extra meterage. He was able to carry the ball, and there was a couple of plays where he took a bounce rather than just kicking it from where he was, and I thought that was a real progression for him. I don't think too often this year he's put together full four quarters, so he's played lots of really good moments and played a good half and maybe fades out for a quarter here or there, but as he matures, that'll start to happen a little bit less, and his game impact will even step up another gear, which will be pleasing for us. But he's gone. We're very pleased, obviously, with how he's coming along.
Sam, 63 free kicks in your game on the weekend. It's become a talking point. Jared believes it's become a real issue in the game. Stop me if I'm paraphrasing incorrectly, Jared. And you've got Simon Goodwin coming out and saying, hold your horses, everyone. We shouldn't be criticising.
The number is not an issue to me.
Yeah.
But it's the free kicks that are not paid. But that's another issue.
How are you seeing it, Sam?
Well, the way I look at this is there's around 200 kicks per team in a game, roughly, so 400 kicks, and 70% kicking efficiency is pretty good. So if you do your maths, I think the players are making well and truly more mistakes than the umpires are. So they're the ones that I'll think about and control. And I think about the things I do in the coach's box, and there's lots of things I wish I could have back, and they're the controllables for us. The only thing we think about with umpires is what type of discipline we need to show to make sure we're on the right side of the free kick ledger at the end of the game.
But the game is changing fairly rapidly in what the AFL is expecting the umpires to do, though. Sam, is that something that you think about?
No, it's not. I think umpires have got a really tough. They get, you know, people are annoyed at umpires because of the rules sometimes, and sometimes they adjudicate it perfectly. And I think whenever we have a focus on something, we get a spike in that area. And if you're the umpire's coach, then you're going to have focuses in different weeks, and you're going to start to train different aspects of the game. And you might see more of those in that week. And I don't know any other alternatives. No different for us. If we have a bad tackling week, we might focus on tackling, and our tackling will go up. If they miss a few, you know, free kicks for a certain thing, they'll train that and look at that a bit more, and then it's likely that'll go up. And that's the evolution of umpiring week to week. And I think what happens is they've also got a whole heap of injuries at the moment, so they're getting tested for depth as well, the same way that a playing group is. It's just that they don't have supporters in the stand backing them as often as they should.
Do you think any of the recent rules, like the 666 stand, protected zone, ruck nominations, descent, the dangerous tackle, Mitch, are there any of those that if you could have a say on that you would maybe reverse or take back to where it originally was? Any of those you don't like in the game?
Yeah, there is one for two reasons, and that's the third man up or the nominating the ruck.
Great to hear from Sam, and what a spectacular start to his
done
coaching
well.
Career.
Yep.
He's doing a lot better than most people thought. This person is just doing as well as everyone thought because he's an absolute gun.
Time for a Racing Queensland update with Chris Nelson. The TAB Queensland Racing Carnival is where champions emerge. Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
It's Doomben Cup weekend, Jared. Massive day at Eagle Farm. 10 races, including three Group 1s. And Chris Nelson, you're going to tell us who is going to win all three of them.
I wish I could, guys. But we'll give it a crack. But yeah, massive day at Eagle Farm on Saturday. We missed out, of course, last week with the rain. So the Doomben Cup goes to Eagle Farm, as well as the Kingston Smith Cup and the Queensland Derby. So three Group 1s, 10 races, a massive afternoon. Let's see if I can find you a winner. In the Derby,
yes,
race number 8, I'll go with number 2, Dark Destroyer. So race 8, number 2. The Doomben Cup, well, I have to tip Zaki, but he'll be about $1.40. So we're not going to get rich on Zaki. And Jared, a couple of weeks ago, you asked me what Zaki meant, and
yep.
I did my homework. It's an Arabic name for boys that means one who increases in growth and goodness. So if Zaki wins, you can increase your growth, but it won't be by a lot.
Well, it'll help you increase your goodness as well because you'll have more readies to hand around. What about the weather? Can you give us a long day?
Has it stopped raining?
A long forecast?
It's relentless, but it's going to ease off tomorrow, and we are in for a, would you believe, fine and sunny weekend.
No
I don't think it's been sun yet for about 4 weeks. So we're really looking forward to that. So we'll be on a good track.
Good on you, Chris. Chris Nelson there from Racing Queensland. Hey, just before we go, Jared.
I'm looking up the long-term forecast.
Okay, you look it up. I'll tell you this before we go. A friend of mine who, let's just say he's a frequenter of the punting world.
Yep.
Said to me 3 weeks ago, he said, Sam, I'm just having a look at Fremantle and their run. And COVID's starting to sneak in.
Yep.
They're $7 to miss the final.
You took it up?
And I said, what are you doing, Mitch? They're not going to miss it.
There's been a lot of people said they've beaten no one.
Third best team in the comp.
Yeah.
Anyway, 3 weeks later, they are now $3 to miss the 8.
Wow.
He got them at sevens.
That's good punting. Let me take you to the weather forecast. Tomorrow in Brisbane, 80% chance of rain. Mm. Friday, 60% chance of rain and 24. Saturday, 25, 10% chance of rain.
Okay, that's good. It's getting better.
And Sunday, for what it's worth, 5% chance. So we've got a nice dry weekend up in QLD.
Enjoy tonight, Jared.
Nice to see Richo back in form. Geez, he didn't like it when I had a go at him about his All-Australian team.
And he looks very well rested for a man who's just had his third child.
He does. He does.
I think
Jen's... In fact, I did see that, and I was going to send him a message from Java from all the monkeys over there.
I think Jen's doing all the work, and Richo's just...
luxuriating.
That's what it looks like to me. See you tomorrow, folks.